Hi, my name is Martin Purnell, and welcome to the annual Christmas edition of Off-Grid Christianity. A slightly different edition, as we have a quiz instead of the usual interest getter questions, plus a debate on a variety of topics. Now, if I am a Santa, who are my elves or reindeer? Or maybe, to keep me humble, maybe I should be a reindeer, in which case, what does that make my guests? Gives me great pleasure to welcome back Noel Richards and Martin Scott. Noel, for those who don't know who are you? And are you Santa, a reindeer, or an elf today?
I'm Noel Richards. I'm a singer-songwriter. I have been known in the past to lead congregational worship and write worship songs as well. And just happy to be with you.
Thank you. Are you, Martin, a Santa, a reindeer, or an elf for today's podcast? And who are you, please?
I think I might be a reindeer for today. Help pull this along, and you can drive me where you want to go.
Thank you.
How about that for humility? I'm Martin. I live in Spain, born in Scotland, and then moved to England when I was 18. So I crossed a very big border at that point. What do? I do a bit of writing, some podcasting, and also, I guess you might call it a bit of mentoring of those who are a little younger than I am.
Thank you. But you're only in your 30s anyway.
Well, we can talk about that because Noel and I, this coming year, we'll reach one of those biblical milestones.
We will, absolutely.
Wow.
21 again, or something else.
Something else, yes, a bit more major.
Well, yeah. This is where I say, you don't look it. Moving on then, very quickly, let's go to the quiz then, if that's okay. Fingers on the buzzers. Now, obviously, due to technology beyond our control, we haven't got any, well, we have got fingers, but we haven't got any buzzers. So who's going to be Fizz this year, and who's going to be Buzz? Martin, Reindeer, Scott, which are you going to be? Fizz or Buzz?
I'll be Fizz.
No, Reindeer Richards, that means you are Buzz then.
I'll be Buzz. Okay, happy to do so.
First question, who am I?
Buzz.
No, Richards.
You are Martin Purnell.
Actually, that's very good. That is very good.
He did not buzz. I make a request, a penalty point.
Why? I did. I went Buzz.
You did say Buzz.
I'd edited it out of my recording. Okay, I concede. I did not hear the buzz.
It was very good, Noel. Well done.
I was concentrating on the question. Well done, Noel.
Pleasure.
Who am I supposed to be? That's better, isn't it? I was born in the year, and please just stop when you think, you know, by saying Fizz or Buzz, because this could go on a bit otherwise. I was born in the year 907 and died in September 935. I was assassinated by my younger brother, who we shall call Bolly the Cruel. Funny name to be christened with, and a bit of a plot spoiler name as
Buzz.
Well. Yes, Noel Richards.
One of the princes that was locked in the tower.
No, I should carry on.
Okay.
My mum didn't like the fact my granny was a big Christian influence on me, so had her assassinated as well on the 15th of September 921 AD. My mum became regent and immediately brought in rules directed at Christians. The Christian nobles decided to act and staged an uprising, which not only was successful, but it meant that I became controller of the government. I founded a rotunda that is today the basis of St. Vitus Cathedral. Now, three of Bolly's mates agreed to kill me at the feast of St. Cosmas and Damien. They jumped on me and then proceeded to stab me. Bolly then joined in by finishing me off with a lance that went right through me. Pope Pius
says,
Martin Scott.
Damien.
Damien the social worker or Damien from The Omen?
Damien from The Festival Off.
No, I shall carry on.
Oh my gosh.
Pope Pius II asserted my legend was indeed fact. I was only a duke when alive, and a song about me is one of the oldest known songs.
Buzz. King Wenceslas.
It is King Wenceslas, yes.
Excellent. Yes. See, when you get onto music, that's when I come to the fore.
You should have done it straight away, baby.
Yeah, should have started with that, yeah.
September 28th is now an official holiday in the Czech Republic. The legend is that I went on a journey in a very bad winter to give food, money, etc. to a poor peasant. My page was about to give up on his journey, but followed every footprint I made in the deep and crisp and even snow, which would have been the biggest clue of all.
Oh, come on.
That's, of course, how he orders his pizzas as well.
That was one long question.
Yeah, not only a podcast, but, you know, a history lesson as well. I am very impressed, Martin.
Thank you. I thought it was a good question, even though it took 3 hours to get to the final line. Question two. We're talking of the song Good King Wenceslas. And by the way, his name was Bolly Slouse. But I thought if I said Slouse, that might give it away. So, what day is the Feast of Stephen, please?
Fizz.
Martin Scott.
December 26th.
It is. Correct.
Ooh.
Very good.
I'm very impressed with that.
Yeah, I am too.
But then he's been to theological college, so he's probably learned all about the saints.
We had 3 years of sitting in classes about saints.
Excellent. Well, obviously paid dividends.
Not that I remember that.
We remember that one. December 26th. i.e. the second day of Christmas. However, in Eastern Christianity, it's December 27th for the feast day of Stephen. However, in those days, the Julian calendar was in use. So our Gregorian calendar quotes those days now as the 31st of December and the 1st of January, respectively. And did you know that it's an official public holiday in the Republic of Ireland, Italy, Poland, Germany, and many more? The feast day of St. Stephen.
Impressive.
Okay, that is impressive.
Anyone who says that I've been looking at Wikipedia to get these questions.
Completely misguided.
And now, question three. Can I just say?
I have a neighbour whom I have named Wiki after Wikipedia.
Really? Because?
I had another neighbour who asked the very question you're asking. Why? Because, my dear neighbour, whatever question you ask him will have an answer.
Is it right?
It is not guaranteed to be correct. It could have been edited, but he will always have an answer.
And if he's listening, hello, Wiki. Maybe not. So the next question is a music question. And can I just say, of all the questions I have asked in all these years that we've been doing these things, I'm very proud of this one. Who is the odd one out and why? Neil Sedaka, Gustav Holst, Henry Gauntlet, John Neal, John Hopkins. Would you like me to say those names again?
Please.
Neil Sedaka, Gustav Holst, Henry Gauntlet, John Neal, and John Hopkins.
Buzz.
Oh, Noel Richards.
Neil Sedaka.
Because?
He's still alive.
That's not the answer I have written here. You are right with Neil Sedaka, I'll give you that, but wrong reason. Martin Scott.
I could give you another answer. I could go with one of the other names.
Go on then.
Harry Gauntlet.
Because?
Because he's the only one who gave his name to a running act.
Because he's running the gauntlet.
A what?
Run the gauntlet.
I think you should deduct points for that, Martin.
It's very good, though. No, I'll put you out of your misery.
Run the gauntlet.
That makes him the odd one out.
The answer I have here is Neil Sedaka. Because all those names, they have all written music for a carol, except Neil Sedaka, who wrote O Carol, about a girlfriend of his at the time.
Well, that is incredible.
That is at least a point each, or half a point to Noel.
Yes.
Yeah.
You got half the answer right. I got my answer totally right. Not an answer to your question, but my answer was 100% correct.
If it keeps you happy, yes, because it's Christmas. So, yes, next bonus question, Noel. Neil Sedaka, O Carol.
Yes.
Who was Carol, apart from his girlfriend at the time, or someone that he fancied at the time?
Carol King.
It was indeed. And, of course, the song is called Carol, spelt C-A-R-O-L, as in the carols of St. Christmas. But Carol King had a letter E after a name as well.
That's right.
Question four. I'll give you a 10-year leeway for your answer on this. In what year was the first Christmas tree lit up by electric lights and in which city, please?
Fizz.
Martin Scott.
1643.
Sorry, I shouldn't be laughing. Carry on. Yeah, okay, 1643.
Electricity.
1643, and I'm going to go for Frankfurt.
Frankfurt, okay. No.
I would go probably for the 19th century. I would say it would be around the middle of the
century. You've won already, by the way.
I've won already?
Well, yeah, because I mean, I said 10 years.
It was Prince Albert, who introduced the Christmas tree to the UK.
He did.
And so that would have been at Buckingham Palace or wherever the Prince Albert and Victoria were living.
Mm-hmm.
Say London,
mm-hmm.
Middle of the 19th century. There you go.
Well, you're right. It's 19th century. It was, in fact, 1882. And New York City is the answer. Edward Johnson, who was a friend of Thomas Edison, who invented the light bulb, and you know they knew that electricity was around, so he was able to invent the light bulb. Mm. So the first Christmas tree lit up by electric lights was in 1882 in New York City.
Could I just clarify something?
You can clarify.
In your original question, you did not say lit up by electricity.
I think I did. I said, in what year was the first Christmas tree lit up by electric lights and in which city?
Yeah, you did. That's why when you started going 1640, I thought... Martin's having a brain fade.
I thought it was like a candle or something like that you were referring to.
A candle made out of electricity. Yeah,
yeah. I must focus more because I'm very anxious to get the answers out. Because I've written all the answers down beforehand.
Moving on. Now, you're going to like this one then, Martin, from your theological days.
Oh, come on.
And in fact, Noel, because he made that very bold statement, if it's anything to do with music, he might have a good chance at this as well. Or maybe not. What did the Church of England in 1820... officially allowed to happen for the first time?
Fizz.
Martin Scott.
The singing of a Christmas carol.
I'm going to give that to you, yeah. It was a singing of hymns, in fact, but I'll let you have that.
Thank you.
That's very good, Martin. What did they do before that?
They ought to do the psalms, you know, the chanting way, but that was it. They weren't allowed. And then there was a couple of renegade churches, I think one in Sheffield, I think, started to sing hymns. And so eventually the Church of England decided, oh, well, enough's enough. We'll let you sing hymns as well.
Okay.
Yeah, just as well CDs weren't around in the early 1800s, no.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had a job, would I?
No, not from Church of England, no.
No.
And finally, the last question, before we look at the old scoreboard. Question 6. What can't you sell to the under-12s, especially at Christmas time?
Fizz.
Martin Scott.
Christmas crackers.
Because?
Well, that's the answer to the question. I wrote it down earlier today.
Buzz.
He's right. He is right. No.
Because they have gunpowder within them.
They do.
So there's a bonus point for me there.
There is. I'm going to give you that. Yes. What can't you sell? So Martin's technically correct. Christmas crackers. Also, we'll throw into that sparklers and party poppers as well. Because of the little bit of gunpowder they have in there, it's therefore considered to be a statutory one firework. And so therefore, any shop that is selling crackers to under 12s, it's illegal.
Okay.
The end.
Wow. Very illuminating.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
So I hope that gives everybody a chance to think, oh, I'm really looking forward to Christmas now. Can't wait to ask those questions over the Christmas table on December 25th.
Yeah.
Let's go more now then to have a debate on various subjects, especially after the year that's been rather interesting. So question number one then for discussion, what have you liked and disliked about the church this year, please? Who's going to start?
I'll throw a couple of things
in. Go on, Martin.
A dislike, I think the sadness of scandals, people being discredited. I'm thinking particularly my background, the charismatic world of certain movements that have not probably reflected on what has shaped them very accurately. And the number of stories that we read or hear of people that should be respected, but you realize they've been hiding things in skeletons in the cupboard. That area, I always get disappointed about.
Yeah.
And there's been too much of it this year.
Yeah. And I think we've seen that with the Church of England. We've seen that historically with the Catholics as well. I was in the States in May, June, when a whole thing broke out about a mega church leader in Texas. And they'd covered up the fact that he'd had in relations, I think, with an underage girl when he was younger. Yeah. They kept it quiet, but it all comes out in the end. It doesn't really help the gospel. The other thing that I continue to dislike, I think you see it more in the US than you would see it maybe in the UK, but that is Christian leaders who continually endorse political candidates.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that the role of a Christian leader is to influence those that you are, I suppose, overseeing, pastoring, whatever. So I think the role of Christian leadership and the church is to speak the truth to power, not to get into bed with it. But continually we see that evangelical leaders want to get into bed with power and be seen as the friend of the powerful rather than those who speak truth to them.
But why then? Why do they want to do that?
I think because if you, this comes from the US, but if you believe in what is known as the Seven Mountains Mandate, then as far as you're concerned, you basically should turn America into the Christian equivalent of Afghanistan. So I call these people the Christian Taliban, who basically want to impose a Christian morality on a largely non-Christian population. So they want to control the seven mountains of influence, the media, education, the arts, government. I can't remember what the others are. But they basically want to create a Christian version of an Islamic State. And I, for one, would not want to live in a country where that happens.
You and I would be scuppered straight away, wouldn't they? Would they bring out a ban on alcohol for a start?
Well, whatever Bible you believe in and whatever God you believe in. And of course, if you believe in an all-conquering God rather than a servant, then it affects everything.
I think on alcohol, they probably would be silent, disapproving in public and opening a bottle in private.
Yeah.
That, to be honest.
Yes.
And that to me also is very sad, you know, because what we are in private and public should not be that kind of gap between the two.
Exactly.
Because it's a fundamental dishonesty.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that's a minor issue. I think the bigger one that Noel brings up is the point, this imposition of a morality that is not chosen. And we object enormously, as he quotes Afghanistan or Iran or wherever you want to go, anything imposed, we object to in the West. But then some people seem to be happy to impose it, provided it is Christian.
Yes, exactly. And I saw, you know, there's a guy, I think he's the head of the education board in Oklahoma, and he's insisting that a Bible is in every single school in Oklahoma. And I think here's a country that has the separation of church and state. And why does it have to be a particular Bible? I won't tell you what the Bible is, because it'll stir up a whole hornet's nest of stuff. So anyway, I just despair when you've got a separation of church and state, and yet Christianity is being imposed on people. How would we feel if we were going into a school and Islam was being imposed on us? I wouldn't want that, or any other religious belief and dogma. So what gives us the right to impose our dogma on a largely unbelieving population?
I'm just trying to work out what the Bible is now, thinking, what if it's the Northern Ireland version, or NIV, as it's known around the world? Sorry, Noel, were you going to add anything else?
I was going to move on to something that I liked, actually.
Do you know what? Obviously, great minds think alike. Moving from the dislike bit, what have you liked? Noel Richards.
Yeah, well, when Trish and I were in the States back in May, June, we did a few little concerts, informal concerts for some friends of ours. Got a friend, German friend, who I've known for many years, who leads worship at a church in Kansas City. And he very kindly organized a house concert for me and Trish.
Saw it on your channel.
Yeah, exactly. It was a great evening. But this church, I loved hearing about this church because it's called Resurrection Church. It's in Kansas City. It's a congregation of 24,000 people each week on several campuses in the city. Loads of people watch online. It's the largest United Methodist church in the USA and one of the leading evangelical churches in the country. Never heard of it. Never heard of the guy who leads it. And what I loved about this church, as I was talking to some of the people from the church that I met, was they are totally committed to justice and inclusivity. I went on their website today just to get some things off, and it says here, we will address injustices and building bridges of healing in our city so that Kansas City looks more like the kingdom of God. We will model for our community and world what it looks like to truly love our neighbors and practice the words of Micah 6, verse 8, to do justice, love kindness, and walk humbly with God. And another little phrase, they focus on efforts to welcome diverse people so that our congregation mirrors the diversity of the broader community and the kingdom of God. A truly inclusive church.
That's very impressive.
Yeah, I was very impressed with the people we met as well. All shapes, all colours, all kinds. Wonderful.
Yeah. Martin, what has impressed you about the church this year?
I think what I'm impressed is both individual churches that I know, that I'm in touch with, and some of the bigger movements who are trying to do their best to be inclusive and to wrestle with some of the theological issues. And dare I say it, at great cost. It's easier to bury our head in the sand, hope it'll go away, but whatever issues we're facing today, we'll have another raft of ones in 5 years' time, another 10 years later. We've got to face the issues, and I hold my hands up with admiration to those in leadership who have the boldness to try to grapple with it. And with the full knowledge, not everybody is going to agree. So they have to fly in the face of being people pleasers to try to find some answers for our society, and the church be faithful to whatever God requires and be a servant to society with open arms. So that's what I like. And I've seen quite a bit of that, both firsthand, people I'm in touch with, and also observing some of the debates that go on.
Talking of debates, we've had this before. I think we actually might have talked about it on last year's Christmas thing about alcohol and should we drink alcohol and all that sort of stuff. If you remember that conversation, Martin. And I was throughout the year trying to find somebody in America because I heard that there were Christians who actually owned breweries. And incredibly, I came across a chap called Christian Kreider, who owns his own brewery in Austin, Texas. I recorded it 2 weeks ago. That'll be going out in the new year. It's phenomenal. And what he has to share, you know, about Martin Luther, his wife making alcohol, and all the thoughts of how he was going in and serving people. And the point that he was making was that people have a problem going through a doorway into a church, but they don't have a problem walking into his pub and having a pint and are prepared to ask, you know, who is this Jesus?
That's very good. Well, Luther, dear Martin Luther, he had a number of books called Table Talk. I think it went a number of volumes. And they are basically recordings of him sitting with his beer with his mates, talking over the table. So that's the roots of our Protestantism. Should we say Martin Luther is the founder thereof? But part of his time was spent with pint in hand.
Yeah, and obviously that was a healthy drink all those years back because you couldn't drink the water because it was bad. So you didn't have little choice other than to drink ale or port, whatever was there. But I think that's an issue now that's well in the past. As Martin said a few minutes ago, the things that we're going to face in the years to come that make that totally relevant. I think, for me, I think theology needs to be continually moving forward, and theology needs to be adapting to the society in which we live, rather than saying this is our theology and society has to adapt to our theology, rather than, okay, how does our faith encompass all these things? Because when the Bible was written, there were no motor cars, there were no aeroplanes, there were no blood transfusions, there were no hospitals, there was nothing like that. So, you know, how are we going to face in the years to come the issue of artificial intelligence? That's a whole new issue, which we have to come to terms with. And if we're still looking back at, oh, should we have a drink of wine? I think we've missed the point altogether.
Yeah.
I'll move on to the next subject. And by the way, you mentioned Martin Luther, obviously the founder of Protestantism, and his little known son, Lex, who was the founder of Kryptonite. I think I've got that right.
They get worse. They get worse, don't they? The jokes get worse on this show.
Oh, jokes? I consider that an honour. Thank you. Allow me to plug the next episode, which will be released on the final Saturday of 2024. It is a tribute to Tony Campolo, who passed away in November. Maybe you heard of him. Maybe you haven't heard of him. Maybe you heard him speak at a major event in the world. Please make time to hear this episode. It features guests who were not just instrumental in introducing to the UK in the early 80s, but also how Tony Campolo shaped their lives as well. Amongst those participating include Peter Meadows, founder of Premier Radio and co-founder of Spring Harvest, plus Steve Goddard, who was his public relations officer in the 80s and 90s. So please have a listen to the special edition of Off Grid Christianity, available at all good podcast outlets starting next week. Plug over. Meanwhile, question two, what have you read or seen that has encouraged you about the Christian faith in 2024?
Right, I will launch in with a big one here because I'm on my third read of it. It's a book that is making big waves in many circles. It's called The Lamb of the Free. Why have I read it three times? Because it is incredibly hard to understand because it's very dense. But here's the bombshell. He is arguing that there's no such thing as substitution in the Bible, that there isn't a Old Testament, not one Old Testament sacrifice that is designed to be a substitute for human sin. Hence, it is making huge waves. It is a dense read, but I'm enjoying it enormously.
And who wrote it?
A young Californian who lives in Canada called Andrew Rilera. The reason why I pause on the last name is because there's a double L in the middle. So if you were Spanish, it's Riera, but it's actually Rilera.
And of course, if you're Welsh, it'd be ch, wouldn't it, like that? No? Is it, if it's a double L?
It'll be ch, double L, yeah. It's ch. Only a Welshman can do that, you see. Yeah, we have very few vowels in the Welsh language.
Yeah. How many letters have you got in the Welsh language?
I can't remember now. It's a long time since I did O-level Welsh at school.
Ah. So thank you for that then. So you're enjoying it immensely for the third time. How controversial is that book then to a normal evangelical person?
Oh, I think it absolutely is hyper controversial because he's not simply arguing there's no such thing as penal substitution, that Jesus bears our penalty. He's arguing there's no such thing as substitution. Let that sink in for a moment.
Yeah, sorry, if it's not Janet and John, I don't understand that. Noel, what do you think?
I read somewhere in the past that the idea that Jesus came to die for our sins wasn't adopted and for many hundreds of years after Christ's passing from this world to the next, that Jesus didn't come to die for our sins. Martin, am I correct in that?
I think the debate has always been in what happens on the cross. What is it for? What does it achieve? So I think that has always been wrestled with. What is late is this idea of God being the judge, you being the guilty one, and we are very grateful that Jesus steps in to say, hey, I'll take the penalty. That is very, very late. That's basically Reformation, although there's some antecedents before that. So we have our friends Martin Luther and John Calvin to thank for that one, and those who have perpetuated ever since. But Rilera, Lamb of the Free, is going a little more radical still. There are things you've got to think about. Certain things translated sin offering in the Old Testament. That is exactly what Mary and Joseph brought to the temple after the birth of Jesus.
Hmm.
If you want to translate that as sin offering, which I think is a very bad translation, it's a little odd, is it not, that Mary, who submitted to God, who was overshadowed by the Holy Spirit, who gave birth to the Holy Child of God, has to then offer what is called a sin offering.
Mm, take your point.
So there's a lot of stuff that does not stack up. And this, is, I think, is part of the bigger issue, which is beyond our scope of today, is we like to make the Bible fit into our pattern rather than let the Bible offend us and help us find new ways of expressing the gospel. A minor point, a heavy read.
Let me get this into my Janet and John style vocab. Are you saying, because I think I've read this somewhere recently, that actually when we talk about Jesus died for our sins, we shouldn't be worrying about that too much? It's because at the end of the day, Jesus came down so that we could understand the first two commandments, which is love God with all your heart and all your soul, and love your neighbour as yourself. And that's more important than getting hung up on that he died on the cross for our sins. Is that what you're saying?
You're asking me what, Mr.
Is that what you're saying on behalf of the book that you're reading?
I think that would have to be nuanced somewhat, but I think it's challenging what is happening at the cross in terms of our view of it. And it certainly goes beyond, which I'd be a long way away from, the idea that God's an angry God looking to punish people and Jesus steps in at the last minute and delivers us and saves us. I think that certainly is not what goes on there. It's to set us free to live another way and ultimately shows us what true humanity is. True love, lay down your life, not just for your friends, but for your enemies. And go back to Noel's point, you know, the cross not only gives me an opportunity to encounter God, it defends my right to reject God.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the amazing love of God, which is why I think Noel and I and many others would object to the imposition of morality over a nation, because God protects our right to reject God. God isn't threatened by that. And so often as Christians, we want to try to make God big again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I look out my window and I don't see a big writing in the sky that goes, I am God and you have to blah, blah, blah. I don't get that. But that's, we would love that to be the case, because that actually is the God that we think we need to promote, which, jumping sideways, I think is why sometimes Christians support certain politicians, because they're big, mean, and will make sure that you comply with whatever they're saying. That is their image of God.
Mm-hmm.
But you see, the great thing about this podcast is that you're Scottish, Noel is Welsh, I'm English. Three different nations under one groove, sort of thing. We can all come to discuss things. And that's what we're doing. We're discussing. This is how I've learnt my Christian walk ever since I reluctantly became a Christian in 1987, by being able to talk things through. And that's what we're doing here, surely.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what we should be doing, is sitting around the table with a bottle of wine or a glass of beer or coffee or tea and hammering out some of these things. I love the conversations I have with certain friends whereby nothing is off the table.
Yes.
You know, I had a conversation once with a couple of friends where I made a comment and their immediate reaction was they were questioning my faith.
I've had that.
Because I was challenging a viewpoint that they believe is godly. And I said, well, I would disagree with that. Why can't we talk about this? Absolutely. And immediately they then go, well, are you struggling? Are you losing your faith? No, I'm not. Trish had a great word, a great little phrase. I think I mentioned it on a podcast when I did it with you and Dave Bilbrough about doubt being the means that we explore our faith. It's something like that. I'm forgetting now, but I just love this idea that we are coming together. We've got lots of questions, lots of doubts. We're teasing stuff out. Our faith is a living faith. It's not a dead faith. What I worry about is when a church has a statement of faith, which is rigid. If I was going to be part of a church community, I'd want to be part of a church community that says we don't have a statement of faith. We basically are exploring what it means to be followers of the way, what it means to be Christian. We don't know. And I think certainty is a curse. And so I love these podcasts where we can maybe rattle some cages, not because we just wanted to rattle cages for the sake of it, but actually we need to think about things. I love the conversations I have with friends. That's why me and Martin and our wives, we love getting together, because nothing's off the table. And I think that's where we've got to be in the future. I'm not afraid to confront the difficult questions and have our theology really inspected.
Thank you very much indeed.
I hope that's helpful.
Let's just lighten the load just a little bit before we get into some more deep stuff. If you could meet any fictional character and have them come to life for a chat, etc., who would it be? Noel.
Well, I was thinking about this, and the only one I could come up with was Jack Reacher.
Very good. Because?
Well, he fights injustice. He stands up for the weak against the strong. He confronts bullies. I'd like to be brave enough to confront bullies. I remember years ago being in Uganda and at a hotel in a restaurant in Uganda, and there was a big South African guy there. And in a crowded restaurant, he basically verbally abused this Ugandan waiter. And the whole restaurant sort of like, oh my gosh. You know, and he basically made the waiter feel tiny, small, insignificant. I thought, oh, I'd love to go over there and shut him up. So, I'd like to talk to Jack Reacher and go, how can we do that?
Yeah.
I love the fact that he actually says to a whole gang of guys, well, you're all going to hospital in the next few minutes. I love that. This is very non-Christian, Noel. But I love the fact that he does stand up for the weak against the oppressors. And I think that's what we need to be learning how to do it in a way that works.
Yes.
Really good, Noel.
Great answer, Noel.
Really good. That reminds me, if I can give a true story of a friend of Noel and myself. He was on a bus in London, absolutely packed. On came a young lady with a pushchair. Clearly, from dress, was a young Muslim lady. And she gets her pushchair in with baby in sight. The bus lurches along. She bangs into somebody next to her, at which point somebody says, oh, you ought to go back to your country. You don't want your types here. So our friend stood up and said, you can be quiet right now. At which point somebody else said, who do you think you're talking to? I'm talking to him and to every other racist on this bus. He's a wonderful Christian leader.
Oh.
This bus is jolting along. We're all banging into one another. So every person in this bus can get a bit of grace for one another and button it now. At which point the bus stopped at his bus stop. He got out. Close the door, bus carries on, leads them to it. So he's a modern day, real life Jack Reacher.
A real modern day Jack Reacher, yes.
Yep.
Good answer, Noel, thank you for that. Martin Scott, who would you choose?
Fictional character.
And then you can ask me if you want.
I can ask you.
As well, yeah, just so I can join in on this one. Martin, who would you choose?
Well, I was thinking about this and I would go for Jonah.
My mate, Jonah.
Yeah.
Because he's not fictional though. Or is it? Oh, you've been controversial here.
Ah.
Oh.
Well, on what basis do you say he's not fictional?
Well, on the question, I said if you can meet any fictional character. Oh, here we go.
On what basis are you saying he's not fictional?
I'm saying on behalf of the evangelical who takes the Bible literally.
Well, I'm glad you feel authorized to speak on their behalf. No, I think he's fictional. So I would love for him to be real. And I would talk to him because there's some tough stuff in there.
Yeah.
You're getting swallowed by a whale because you're disobedient. Throw me overboard and then the water will be peaceful. Jonah, I know it's a bit of a story, but assuming we could make him real, I'd love to hear him really. What do you think about all of that going on?
He's one of my heroes.
Come on,
he's one of my heroes.
We all wrestle with our faith.
Yeah.
But that's a bit extreme.
He's one of my heroes.
Come on.
He is. Because, I'll tell you why. Because it's the very end bit where he's really cheesed off. He's sitting under that fig tree or whatever he was growing up, really angry with God because God didn't do what he wanted him to do. And it's like, I exactly know where you are on that.
Yeah, but come on. So in your experience,
yeah.
Mr. Purnell, in your experience, the times when you've done a few things that you shouldn't do or not done the things you should do, have you even come close to getting thrown overboard and swallowed by a big old fish?
Been asked to leave a church. Does that count? That's the same thing, isn't it?
Well, okay. Well, maybe. My point is, come on, this is a bit extreme. What do you really think about God?
Right. On the fish thing?
Yeah, no, not all that. Jonah. I'm talking about getting Jonah around the table.
Yes.
I accept it's a bit made up. But getting him around the table as if he's a real person, I would love to know. Because what on earth is some of that doing in the Bible? Let's face it.
Hmm.
What kind of picture of God does it give? This is what I love about the Bible, is it doesn't tell you a lot of stuff. It makes you wrestle with it.
We used to have a song about that.
What was the song, though?
I haven't a clue, but I grew up with all these terrifying stories of what God did to people, and we had nice, happy songs about it.
Yeah.
Like, God caused all these people to drown. Isn't our God wonderful?
We're so getting a little controversial here, Martin. You'd better pull us back.
So I grew up with a God that basically does nasty things to people and we sing happy songs about it.
Has Noel Richards ever written a bad song where it's full of death and gloom and doom? You haven't, have you? Not yet.
I've written some pretty bad songs, which would make you want to listen to somebody else. Looking back at it, when I was a kid, we had all these stories. We had flannel graphs in Sunday school. And then we sang songs about it. But thinking about it, it's awful. A woman puts a baby that she loves into a little basket and sends it down the Nile, and that's it. What happened to her? Well, we get the story of Moses, you know, but what happened to her? Putting your baby in a little thing and sending it down the river, that's horrible. But we got a nice, happy Sunday school chorus about that with lots of actions. Little wonder about a lot of things to unlearn as an adult Christian.
Makes you wonder why some denominations, just to be controversial here, don't allow singing in church, like the Church of England prior to 1820, one of my questions.
Yeah,
wow. Be careful what you sing, because a lot of people get the theology from the things they sing.
Yes.
So I've got a mansion over the hilltop, which is a load of rubbish.
I've got a what? Match?
I've got a mansion just over the hilltop in that bright land where we'll never grow old. And someday yonder we'll never more wander, but walk the streets that are paved with gold. What a load of rubbish.
Do you know that hymn chorus, Martin?
I have heard it. I think it's a Pentecostal one.
Probably is.
I think that's some you've written, but I have heard it, yes. An Elam chorus, no doubt.
I'm still trying to come to terms with My Lighthouse. Oh, you don't know that one, though?
My Lighthouse?
Yeah.
No.
So who's going to ask me who I would have then?
Yeah, who would you have?
Yeah, who Martin? Would you have?
Oh, thank you.
Fictional character could come back to life.
Number six.
Come to life.
Number six. Show my age, don't I?
From The Prisoner.
From The Prisoner, Noel. Patrick McGowan's classic cult person, number six. So I'd love to sit down and say, I understand what you mean about trying to escape and you can't escape, but you kept on going. Tell me more, Mr. Number Six. Tell me more. So that's who I would do. Meanwhile, getting back to theological stuff, or maybe not.
Okay.
In light of making America great again, or MAGA, as they call it, I think this was a question donated to me by Mr. Martin Scott. How can we make Christianity great again then? Martin.
How can we make Christianity great again? I think we've got to, first of all, define what is great. He wants to be greatest, be servant of all. Jesus said, I'm one among you. Got up from the table, towel around his waist, washed their feet. A task you could not even ask a Hebrew slave to perform. He went to the lowest point. My problem with all this language of great again is the word great is not being defined, or we know it's being defined. It's above everybody else, asserting your own will, making sure that everybody else does what you want them to do internationally, that you control all things. It's an totally anti-Jesus message. Possibly, if I replace the word Jesus with Christ, we might be able to say it's an anti-Christ message.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what it is. So make Christianity great again. I think this is the discovery we're on. What is the heart of Christianity? If we assume it is dominating and domineering, then obviously we'll go down one path.
Mm.
But our scriptures tell us that here are those, quotes, who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Who are these? It asks in Revelation. These are those who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. And what's the first picture of the Lamb? Well, it says that John heard the Lion of Judah has overcome. We love that. Could write a song or two about that, no?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And he turned and he saw something. And what does he see? He sees a lamb that's been slain. So I think we've got to understand the kind of God that we follow and the God we serve. And that would change our whole viewpoint in terms of what we're looking for, particularly in terms of the Christian faith. And it would marginalize what are we looking for in terms of the United Kingdom or America, or this, or that, or the other. Where are the battles and the wars over? It's who's going to be the greatest, who's going to dictate.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus came through his own death, brought peace. Not through war, but through his own death.
Yeah, one of the most terrifying phrases I heard several years ago was at a stadium event I did in Wembley, the new Wembley Stadium. I was invited to do a few songs there, which was great. I enjoyed going there, didn't have to pay for it. Unlike the one we did back in 1997. So it was good to be there, but I was in like the little press room and I heard this person being interviewed and they said, well, the fact that we've got 30,000 people in the stadium today shows that we are taking the nation for Jesus. And I thought, 30,000 people? The stadium's all over Britain full with more people than that today. And what is this thing, taking the nation for Jesus. And that's a horrible statement, that we need to take the nation for Jesus. Why? Did Jesus ever say, take the nation for me? He said, go and make disciples. He said, love your neighbor as you love yourself. He didn't say, go and dominate. But somehow we've got this idea that we as the church have the right, somehow, to dominate. And do we want really a repeat of what we did all those hundreds of years ago, the kind of Christianity we exported to the developing nations, where now we make Africans in hot temperatures wear a suit on a Sunday? Ridiculous. You export a kind of Christianity, a cultural, I would say cultural Christianity, not a biblical Christianity, but a cultural Christianity that is far removed from what we were intended to be. That's my little contribution.
Very good. I'm still coming to terms with the fact that there was a press rumour that the new Wembley, because the previous time in 1997, wasn't it?
Yeah, 97.
A, we didn't have a press room, and B, I had to interview you in a corridor, in a cloakroom.
Yeah, that's right.
So a press room. Wow, things have really moved on.
Oh, yeah. New stadiums, new times. Absolutely.
It's a lovely stage in mind.
The old one was iconic.
It was iconic, but you were so far away, having gone there many a time to watch England. And Bristol City, I'll just throw that in as well. No, the new one's far better.
Right.
Bristol City, it's a football team.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
Okay, episode 104. And theological and anthropological scholar and rector of St Mark's Church in Sydney, Australia, Michael Jensen, shared that out of the 17 countries that make up the West, 16 are in decline when it comes to Christianity. Yet everywhere else, it is increasing. So why is it decreasing in the West? And why is it increasing everywhere else? Martin, you can go first, please.
Oh, you dropped me in it. Nice one. Yeah, I mean, the statistics don't lie, and that is exactly it. But I'm an optimist. I think it has to decrease in the West, partly referring back to what Noel said. I think we have historically exported a cultural Christianity. You know, the thin end, wear a suit on a Sunday in a hot climate. That's a cultural issue. But far deeper, I think, a cultural issue of dominance and ruling over and taking control. I think that's what we've exported. So I would say in the West, why is it decreasing? Because Christendom is over, where we were privileged. You know, if you go back in church history, there was a time you were not allowed to serve in the Roman army if you were a Christian. Then there came a changeover where you had to be a Christian to serve in the Roman army. A radical shift. I'm talking about post-Constantine. And obviously I come at it with a bias, but I also come at it with optimism. I think where are we at in the West? I think it's a rediscovery, if I'll be brutally honest, a rediscovery of who Jesus is. Because Jesus is the image of the Father. There isn't another God. The only God that exists is the one that looks like Jesus. And that's why I always struggle with theology books. Where did they start? The doctrine of God. How can you start there? I know God, and then I try to make Jesus fit into being like God. Jesus turned it on his head. Mm-hmm. If you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Hence, if you've not seen me, write your books, but you haven't seen the Father. So I think there is a decrease, and I'm not rejoicing over the decrease and increased all spirituality, all roads lead to God. I'm not rejoicing over that. But I also see it as an incredible opportunity, you know, for me as an individual, discover who Jesus is, to live it out so that people might at least have to wrestle with the Jesus that I hope has some resemblance to the Jesus of Scripture. Why is it increasing around the world? Because I think they're in a different culture, a different time season. And I think that kind of Christian message that they're having has got a great appeal to them. But they're not, to be honest, seeing their society transformed. They're seeing the divisions there. And I think that the gospel is far more to do with a gift to society to see it transformed, to look a little bit, it'll never be perfect, but a little bit more like heaven's realities, where there's care, love, care for the outcast, the marginalized, et cetera, et cetera. So yes, I agree totally with the statistics. There are parts of it that are alarming. But I think we've got to look at, rather than look, let's go back to a former era. What might it look like if we would go forward into an era that is very different?
Thank you, Marcy.
Yeah. Faith is not dying out. Faith is not dying out. But people, they've had enough of the institution. The institutions are seen not to work. I guess what, you know, looking at news in the UK, all the big institutions are seeing they're failing, basically. The justice system is failing. The health system is failing. The policing system is failing. There's very little that people can put their trust in these days. And then you see that the institutional church is failing. But I don't think people have a lack of faith. I think when you have conversations with people, you find that there is a seeking. There is a spirituality that people possess. And so I think, as Martin says, we have a great opportunity to explore what it truly means to be Christian, to truly discover what it means to be followers of Jesus. Who is Jesus? Yeah. These are opportunities, not a problem.
Our final question. What excites you about 2025, which is just a week away? Martin?
Well, for me personally, I'm looking forward to a birthday. A little milestone, I hope, because Noel shares not the same day, but the same year. Of being born, that we can meet up.
Yeah.
Have a little face-to-face. That would be something I look forward to at a personal level. Because for me, it's a time to reflect. I think birthdays are a time to reflect. I probably, this will come as a shock to both of you, I probably have less years remaining on the planet than I've had thus far. Probably.
Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah. Let me get my calculator out. We all have X number of days, few or many ahead. I'm looking forward to the coming year to reflect and to continue to do as I've been doing the last probably 25 years. Where do I need to be repositioned to be of some reflection of heaven and some reflection of heaven to people that I meet, that I live among, and also meet from time to time? And I think into that, without getting over dramatic, I think some of the surprises that always come your way, surprises and opportunities that you didn't see come, that you didn't foresee, but they come your way. I look forward to discovering what those might be and what new things I'm going to learn and things I will have to unlearn.
Mm. Excellent answer.
Yeah.
No.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, I find that a difficult question to answer because, you know, I don't really think about, a new year is coming. It's time for New Year's resolutions and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
To me, life is a continuum. You know, I mean, we live from day to day. We have today. We don't have tomorrow. You know, we've all seen that. That's been our experience over the years. We've seen people who thought they had tomorrow, but they didn't have tomorrow.
Yep.
So we have today. So I want to make the most of today, make the most of whatever, how many years lie ahead for us, because yes, we are not getting any younger. 21 is, you know, quite a milestone age. But yes, I think I always get excited about thinking, I wonder what songs we'll write this year. Where will the melodies come from? What new ideas will we come up with? What will we discover? So it's continually unfolding life for us, and it's not getting boring. Quite excited about whatever lies ahead. And as Martin says, who are we going to meet? Who's going to change our lives, you know, in conversations? What can happen? There's so much potential out there. So I think we should always keep looking forward. Let's not look back. I mean, I'm grateful for the past. I'm grateful for the journey we've been on. But let's keep looking forward, because as long as we keep looking forward, then I think we'll be in the right place.
Good answer. And if I could throw in my hat onto this question as well, if that's right, if I'm allowed to.
We'd love you to.
Yeah, throw in your hat.
Oh, bless. Well, I think actually it comes partly because of what Martin said about my old mate Jonah, and that he's dared to suggest that he's fictional. And the great thing is, like Noel said, you know, there's nothing better than sitting around and having a dinner table conversation. And that's how I have managed to stay the course despite everything. I've been able to come out with rubbish most of the time, but I've been prepared to listen to what people have said. And because of that, my faith has matured and I'm beginning to realize more who Jesus is as we progress on that one.
Fantastic.
And so I think anyone that's been listening to this podcast has got towards the end and feels knocked off, go away, please. Chat it through with people, see what they say. You're more than welcome to write an email to me. I'll gladly pass it on to Martin or Noel if you felt offended. But I know what it's like. And I've seen in the past 15 months, over one particular podcast where the audience figures, and Noel and I have talked about this before, just were suddenly decimated because of what one person said, who I thought was brilliant, especially as the second half of the podcast was all about Jonah, funnily enough. And I'm thinking, wow, having listened to podcast again just 2 weeks ago, it's like, it really is powerful stuff, and yet people can get offended. So please don't get offended immediately. Let's look at 2025. Let's start a new leaf. And instead of being offended, go and talk it through with someone. Guys, thank you so much, as always, for another great chinwag, especially over Christmas. I wish all those people listening today, especially if you're feeling lonely at Christmas, And that's not a cue for a song by Mud, but we will be getting a cue from Noel in a minute about a song. But if you feel lonely at Christmas, I hope this podcast has made you think. I hope you've had a laugh or two as well. And just phone somebody up or go in next door and just chat to somebody as well. That'd be great. Noel.
Yes.
Mr. Music Man, it's only fair, I think, that we finish off this podcast with a rousing carol, or maybe not. What have you chosen for us, good sir?
Well, back a few years ago, Trish and I did a little online Christmas event, and we sang Silent Night together, which is a lovely song. It was made for guitar, really. So we thought that would be an appropriate way to end this podcast. Silent Night, featuring Noel and Trisha Richards. And thank you, Martin, for having us on the podcast again. Yeah.
No, thank you, guys. Thank you. See you next year.
Absolutely. So, do you need to wish anybody a Merry Christmas, or is that it?
I've done it. Martin, do you want to wish anybody a Merry Christmas?
Well, wish you guys a Merry Christmas and those listening in. Really enjoyed being together and love the interaction and that we can tease things out. So, Merry Christmas, one and all.
Yeah, absolutely. Merry Christmas.
Thanks, guys.
Silent Night. So tender and mild.
Next time on Off-Grid Christianity.
The media got hold of it, made a big deal of it. This Sunday, in a church near you, you may get a visit of a mystery worshipper. So I was telling Campolo about this, that had gained all this publicity, and that we had, as a result of this, the Macmillan English Dictionary had put mystery worshipper into their dictionary as a new phrase. And I was boasting about this to Campolo, kind of, how about that? And he said, yeah, I can just see you standing in front of the pearly gates. St. Peter says to you, did you feed the poor? Did you care for the sick? And what can you say, Goddard? You can say, no, but I got mystery worshipper into the dictionary.
So please join me and guests Steve Goddard, Peter Meadows, Dr. Ash Barker and Michael Harvey for an extra special podcast celebrating the life of theologian, sociologist and international speaker Tony Campolo. Until then, cheerio.